Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And one of the main reasons Donald Trump won the election is the support of rural voters in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, states the Democrats had been winning for many years in presidential elections. Speaker of the House Paul Ryan is from Wisconsin. So is Donald Trump's choice for White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus, who's been the Republican National Committee chair. My next guest happens to have a book that looks closely at rural Wisconsin voters, including what makes them go for someone like Trump. Remember that some counties that voted for Obama in 2008 and 2012 went for Trump last week. Why did that happen? Are they, quote, alt-right? Are they cheering Trump for appointing Steve Bannon from Breitbart to the job of chief strategist and counsel? Kathy Kramer is a political scientist and a professor at the University of Wisconsin at Madison and director of the school's Morgridge Center for Public Service. And she's the author of the book, The Politics of Resentment, Rural Consciousness in Wisconsin and the Rise of Scott Walker. Professor Kramer, thank you very much for joining us. Hello from New York.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
I guess the heart of your thesis seems to have to do with a mix of identity and a sense of unfairness. Is that a good place to start?
Yep, you bet. Just I've found among many folks in small towns in rural Wisconsin a sense that they're just not getting their fair share of money, respect, and power, and it's a pretty potent mix.
When you use the word identity, people will ask if that's about white nationalism in a racist or alt-right kind of way. How much is it?
I'd say no. I mean, racism is definitely part of the story, but I think there's this misconception that Trump voters out here in the hinterland are, ardent members of the KKK, and that's just really not at all what I found.
So, listeners, if you or any of your loved ones is a rural voter, let's keep having the difficult conversation that we've been having all morning so far, in various forms. How would you describe your or their politics of resentment, to use Kathy Kramer's book title? Explain it to other New Yorkers. And now that the rural politics of resentment is the defining politics of the White House and the congressional majority, which it already was, what policies do you want or do your loved ones, who maybe you're going to go and have Thanksgiving dinner with, in this demographic group want? It's not about vilifying Hillary Clinton anymore. What can Donald Trump actually do? Can policies that recognize this resentment and take it seriously bring the country together rather than divide it? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For Kathy Kramer from the University of Wisconsin, author of The Politics of Resentment. You've said these rural white voters aren't opposed to big government like ideological conservative intellectuals are. They just don't see government resources being spent proportionately on them as opposed to people in cities. Is that a surrogate explanation for racial competition? Because cities is sometimes used as a euphemism for black and Latino in national politics, as you know.
Yeah, not entirely. I mean, when people are talking about those people in the cities, they're in part talking about people like me, you know, white urban professionals. They're, of course, referring to people of color, racial minorities, too, especially in Wisconsin, since we're such a segregated state and disproportionately our racial minorities live in the main cities of Madison and Milwaukee. But when they're talking, when they're focusing resentment on the cities, it's many things. You know, it's a sense that government is there, that the urban elite are there, and racial minorities too.
These Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania counties that went for Obama in 2008 or 2012, and Trump last week. Do you get that? Is that Obama being more attractive to many of them than Romney or McCain, but somehow Clinton was less so than Trump? Is there a narrative for that, or is it not the same people? And maybe the Democrats there just didn't turn out.
Yeah, well, it's partly about turnout. But yes, sometimes they are the same people. And the narrative that I hear is that Obama many people thought that maybe he was something different, that he was a different kind of politician. And they see that message in Trump, too, this sense that he's going to shake things up in Washington, D.C. And that message just really resonates with people. In other words, they're looking for someone who's not a typical politician because they feel as though government completely ignores people like them and disrespects people like them.
And so they saw government policy favoring African-Americans and immigrants in an economy of scarcity where they were also hurting and asking for scraps?
In general, there's just a lot of opposition to government programs in general. There's a very kind of prominent notion of deservingness in their conversations and their sense that they're not getting their fair share and it's going to other people who aren't as deserving, who don't work as hard as they do. So sometimes it's about racial minorities. Sometimes, honestly, it's about their people, white folks in their community on disability that they think ought to be working to support themselves. So, yeah, it's opposition to people of color, but it's opposition to a lot of what they see as, you know, as unfair handouts.
Huh. Because I could ask a question from the opposite perspective, and maybe you have a good answer. Why didn't things like Obamacare become popular with them? That subsidized insurance for previously uninsured working class people. There could have their resentment could have landed on the insurance companies or the pharmaceutical companies rather than the president trying to expand insurance coverage, no doubt for many of them, or free public college for their kids to be paid for by a dedicated tax on the wealthy Americans, et cetera, as more relevant to their futures than, say, resentment toward Mexican immigration.
Mm-hmm. Great question. The most common explanation I hear is among people who acknowledge that they personally have financially benefited from Obamacare, meaning they can now afford health care or it's costing them less than it used to. They still don't support Obamacare because they don't want to be told by the federal government that they must buy it, that they just resent having to spend their money on health care, being told that they must spend their money on health care or pay a fine.
Oral in Brookhaven, Long Island. You're on WNYC. Hello, Oral. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. It's Oral, but that's okay.
Sorry.
I really like your show. I may be wrong about this, but I have the impression that we give inordinate weight to the opinions of rural America. I live in Brookhaven Town, Suffolk County. I went door-to-door for the Democrats. We lost. Anna Thrawn Holst lost, Hillary Clinton lost out here. So I talked to a lot of these disgruntled people. And my main impression was that they're getting their news from disreputable sources and they're believing a lot of garbage. But as far as subsidies go, don't we have agricultural subsidies and all kinds of benefits? Don't the urban areas pay far more in federal taxes that are distributed nationwide? And isn't every election season weighted towards the opinions of the swing states where most of us don't live? And just the fact that all these states get two senators, even though we have far greater population in New York, I mean, that's anti-democratic. Gerrymandering is anti-democratic. The Electoral College is anti-democratic. So why are our views and opinions given more weight? It's not true.
Orel, thank you very much. And certainly the politics of resentment runs in many directions, right, Professor? And just to one of the things that she listed there, it's ironically, I think, the blue states that tend to pay the most in federal taxes that then get redistributed to the red states, which tend to be poorer.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of those concerns your caller just raised or I'll just raise go to show that in this politics of resentment, the perceptions are what matter. And it's not necessarily the case, even in Wisconsin, that say rural counties are actually getting less than their fair share on a per capita basis, meaning their fair share of federal and state tax dollars coming back to their community. But the fact that people perceive that they are is what's affecting their votes and their preferences for policies. So doesn't make it right necessarily, but that's where the power comes from, is how they perceive it.
The Occupy movement was the politics of resentment. Why didn't they sign on more to that?
Oh, great question. You know, it's always interesting to me when I ask people, for example, when Wisconsin experienced the debate over Act 10 here after Scott Walker became governor, which was the legislation that took away a lot of power from public employees and made us pay in more to our pensions and healthcare and such. I would ask people, so why is it that the haves and the have-nots are between public employees and private employees? You know, what about, say, corporate CEOs compared to, you know, the rest of the folks in the workforce? And oftentimes what comes up in the conversation is people's sense that, well, corporate CEOs are supposed to make a lot of money. That's the idea. But it's not the case that public employees should be living off of everyone else. So
they can actually wind up in a place through that kind of reasoning where they resent Wall Street less than they resent the teachers and firefighters and Department of Motor Vehicles workers who are their neighbors.
Yes.
Frank in Plainview, you're on WNYC. Hi, Frank.
Yes, I'd like to just agree with your guest there. You know, my family felt that they were being left out, too. Not that they're being left out.
Where are they? Where are they?
In Pennsylvania, Lancaster.
Uh-huh.
They felt this way, that why would someone get all the amenities to live here in this country from another country when we have our own people struggling and fighting to even get meals? And that really bothered them a lot. And they attributed to the politicians and the quagmire in Washington and these politicians who just are career and wanted something different. And hopefully, they're hoping that this guy really drains the swamp and gets this country moving in a direction where we can take care of all Americans. And in turn, I think Americans are so, in that term, Americans that take care of other people. You know, we're very, I can't think of the word now.
Generous?
Yes, generous. And if you keep Americans first, I'm sure the world will be a better place when we're leading. And the only way we can lead is if we take care of all of us. Not a free ride, not amnesty. You do things the right way, and that's basically the way we feel.
Frank, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that sounds familiar, Professor.
Yeah, absolutely resonates with what I hear.
And my guest is University of Wisconsin at Madison, political scientist Kathy Kramer, author of a book called The Politics of Resentment, Rural Consciousness in Wisconsin and the Rise of Scott Walker. Is there a liberal or progressive set of solutions for the politics of resentment, potentially, or, listening carefully to our last caller, is the only way to satisfy them politically, the rural voters who you're writing about, to do things like slow immigration because they feel that the immigrants are getting theirs and they're not getting theirs?
Oh, it's a great question. And honestly, in these few days since the election, the solutions seem pretty few and far between, because I think, honestly, one of the key solutions is to actually spend time and listen to people in rural places who are exhibiting these sentiments. But, you know, right now, and maybe I shouldn't even say right now, but to a lot of folks that sounds like, okay, you're asking me to listen to and pay attention to and respect the views of people who just voted for a man who was endorsed by the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
I am absolutely not going to do that. But I think that it's absolutely necessary to both perhaps create policy that addresses some of the especially economic concerns of these folks so that they actually do feel as though, not just feel, but they experience something of a boost to their local economies. I'm not even sure that's possible. But without better understanding the context in which they live, I don't think it's possible to do that. But, you know, as your RL earlier pointed out, I mean, the perceptions are probably are often not accurate, right, with respect to immigration, this idea that, well, people just need to do it legally. You know, if only they if they use the legal or appropriate mechanisms, then they can come whenever they want to. Well, the fact of the matter is that's just not possible. You know, we know about the waiting list that people are on to get into this country. So it's at this point in time, I think listening really is key, and it's also probably the last thing a lot of people want to do.
Yeah, I agree with you on both counts. In your years of speaking to so many people in rural Wisconsin for your book, was the KKK prevalent? Or if the KKK is an anachronistic institution, something more decentralized or something more contemporary that reflects that, whether it's an adherence to some of the writers on Breitbart News or whatever the thing would be?
You know, I saw absolutely no signs of that, to be honest. And you have to take it with a grain of salt, because here I am. I'm a white, middle-aged woman driving out from Madison. I'm a social scientist, right? So are people going to tell me that they're involved with the KKK? Maybe not. They told me a lot of things. But I think I haven't noticed the kind of organized hate groups that we know are active in certain parts, you know, in certain parts of the state and other, you know, certain parts of the country. But instead, when hate and racism comes up, it's more in the form of just these kind of diffuse sentiments, just really perceiving that other people are getting way more than they're due in terms of respect and public support. And so I have never heard anybody talk about the KKK.
Tracy in Fairfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. Well, I have relatives who voted for Trump, but they are educated, very highly educated, some of them. And my question is why, but if most of the people who elected Trump are non-educated, why are they uneducated, number one? And why is that? Why isn't that a priority for us as a nation to make sure that people understand how the government works, where their taxes are spent, how to think critically? I mean, why isn't that? Why is education a bad thing?
Well, there's a lot in that question, and we're running out of time. And, of course, not educated, a lot of them would say, we're educated, we have street smarts, we know what's going on, we just don't have college degrees. Of course, the demographic split was between college-educated and non-college-educated white voters, although not that much, as it turned out.
But
Professor Kramer, is there a resentment of education? To pick up on part of Tracy's question, and we'll have to leave it here. Is there a suspicion of science that leads people who, you know, might not be oil industry barons to suspect global warming or otherwise suspicion of education, which may be their children's route to success in the economy?
Just briefly, I think there is a suspicion of any kind of entity or information source that they perceive looks down on people like them. And to the extent that higher education, for example, is perceived to be a bunch of urban lefty elitist, yeah, people are suspicious. But they're also respectful of education in general, which is, so there's much more to examine there.
And then educated people, however you want to take that word, feel so frustrated that people who don't know as much as them, not who are stupid, but just who are not as educated about the facts of policy issues and things like that, don't get it.
Right.
And vote against what the educated people see as the national interest.
Yes.
And we can't bridge that divide here. So we will just leave it as another bit of the very difficult conversation that we're having today and that we need to keep having. Kathy Kramer teaches at the University of Wisconsin at Madison and is author of the book, The Politics of Resentment. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Dan Ariely next. Stay tuned.